Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith podcast. I am your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I've invited a guest to, in the spirit of Hebrews 12:1, be one of our great cloud of witnesses to share their stories in order that we would marvel at Jesus ourselves and endure in the faith. This episode was sponsored by The Good Book Company, publishers of Joy in the Sorrow. This is the moving story of Matt Chandler's battle with a potentially fatal brain tumor, but it's also the stories of members of the Village Church whose lives were marked by suffering of various kinds, and how they taught Matt and continue to teach him how to walk with joy in sorrow. Pick up a copy of Joy in the Sorrow at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. Friends, I'm so excited to share that I have a brand new website up and running. You can now find me at christinehoover.net, where you can find podcast show notes, articles I've written, and all my books, including the one I'm releasing in March called With All Your Heart. Instead of blogging, I'm now sending out a monthly newsletter where I share fresh writing meant to help and encourage you in the form of a newsletter. I also share personal updates, what books I'm reading that I think you should read too, and links to articles, podcast episodes, and talks that I've loved. One of the perks of signing up, aside from the newsletter in your inbox each month, of course, is that you get the first two chapters of my book, Messy Beautiful Friendship, free as a thank you. If you haven't yet subscribed, head over to my website, christinehoover.net, or click the link in the show notes from this episode. All right, friends, let's get to the show. My guest today on By Faith is Olga Zapolska. I met Olga this past summer and knew immediately I wanted to have her as a guest on my show. Olga is originally from the Soviet Union, when the Soviet Union still existed, and she shares what it's like for all you know to fall apart, to experience war and upheaval, and how she's learned to face fear through threat of physical harm. She also talks about how she came to faith out of a nation built on communism that tried to stamp out any notion of Christianity. Olga then tells the tragic story of losing her son, Pasha, to a drunk driver here in the United States. She shares what grief has been like for her and what she said in her victim impact statement to the man who killed her son. I learned so much from this conversation and was so challenged by it. I wish you could see Olga's smile as you listen to this, because as I interviewed her, the light of the truth of the gospel shone in her smile and showed me how Jesus gives us power to forgive. Here, friends, is my conversation with Olga Zapolska. Thank you so much, Olga, for joining me on my podcast. This is so fun to have you.
Thank you for having me. And this is my privilege to share my story, what God has done in my life.
Yeah. Well, everybody, just as soon as you started talking, they're thinking, oh, where is she from? tell us where you're from and about your family.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because originally, I grew up at Soviet Union, and I moved from Ukraine in Texas 4 years ago, and everybody asked me this question. So, where are you from? And I remember, it's kind of funny story. The last time when I was at Starbucks, a lady asked me, where are you from? I just said my name, and she already started to ask me, where did you get this accent? And I said, I am from Texas, and I don't have any idea where I got this accent.
She probably didn't know what to do with that.
Yeah. So I grew up at Soviet Union, and you probably heard about this country.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you grew up in the Soviet Union before it dissolved into various countries, correct?
Yeah. It's happened in 1991 when Soviet Union fell apart and was divided in 15 different countries. Mm-hmm. And this place where I located, they called the Ukraine, they gave us a totally different language and government. So I was in my senior year this time.
Wow.
It was a great experience.
Oh, what does that mean? They gave you a different language, meaning they required you to speak a different language?
Yeah, they required us to speak in different language. I would say the grammar a little bit close, but it's still different language. And we didn't know this language. Our teachers didn't speak in Ukrainian. But my class, it was senior year. Mm-hmm. So we were supposed to graduate from the school. And our teachers just helped us to graduate.
Wow.
And when I came at university, I moved in different place in capital of Ukraine, and more people knew this language already there. So it was kind of challenge, you know, to start my freshman year in different language as well.
So you went to college in the Ukraine as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So that time of your life must have been super just disorienting and surreal. Tell us what that's like when your country dissolves and now you have a new country, a new language. You're about to go off to college. I would imagine there's a lot of uncertainty if you can even do that.
You know, when you are a kid and everybody has the same situation, you really don't feel like disappointed, or you don't feel that it's kind of, you know, stress or hard situation, because all your classmates have the same situation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's helped you to go through this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at this time, were you a Christian?
No. And like I said, because I grew up at Soviet Union, and there during almost 80 years, the government fought the spread of church influence on people. And actually it was illegal to import or sell even Bibles. Government was trying to erase a memory of God, and all churches were, you know, turned in storage building, gyms and nightclubs. So during this period of time, three generations changed in my family, and none of them knew God, because in Soviet Union, everyone was obligated to believe in the Communist Party and government leaders. So I remember how, you know, in my classroom, at school, at kindergarten, we always had a picture of our leader of our country, and faith in God was not in line with building communism. So I never went to the church with my parents. We never had a Bible in our home. We never prayed together. So it happened a little bit later.
So tell me how you came to know the Lord.
Honestly, I even don't know where I have to start. But let's say when I was in high school, I was around 15, 16 years old. And I started to ask myself, who am I and why am I living? Because in my heart, I always was certain that human life had a very deep meaning. But for who and for what, I didn't know. And my dad, he was a military officer and electrical engineer, and we lived in a very small military town in mountains in Ukraine. And the small place was marked under the code classified, so nobody even can recognize where we are. But, you know, God knew, and he has his own navigation system. So when I finished my high school, I was 16, and I was accepted at university in the capital of Ukraine, and I started my degree in telecommunication engineering. I met my husband, we married very early, and a little bit later, people started to talk about Jesus to me. And
who were those people?
Who is these people? It was people just, you know, on the street, because before 1991, nobody talked about Jesus at the Soviet Union. But when it became a different country, Ukraine, we've got a little bit more freedom. And I don't know, I think some Americans came in our country and brought the gospel, and a lot of people were turned to God. So people just talked to me about Jesus, and you know, I always it was always important actions to me than words. And when I wasn't able to see real Jesus in their life, it didn't touch my heart at all. So it was, you know, just information about Jesus. And my husband and I, we began to travel and open to accept a new knowledge. And we came across some books about successful people. And through these books, like I said, we never had Bible in our home, but through these books, the seeds of the Word of God first began to grow in my heart. Hmm. And it, you know, mine sounds strange, but all these books were written by American Christian authors who became successful by partnering with Jesus. And as I glanced through the quoted scriptures, I realized that this is make, you know, sense. And it started to touch my heart, and I started to think about these scriptures. And let's say that in this period of time, I was at the deer who pants for water, because, you know, when it's a lot of water around, we even don't think about it. We forget how precious it is. But when we are not just thirsty, but pant for it, all other thoughts take second place. So one day, my husband and I, we just were invited for a newly released movie, The Passion of Christ. Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
So he was the main role. And I honestly don't know why we, you know, agreed to go. But like I said, actions always meant more to me than words. So in this very deep, dark night, because it was really night movie, the love of Father that stretched as a red ribbon through the whole picture touched my heart. Mm. Because I know maybe it's, you know, sounds a little bit weird, but this movie, it was the last point or the last piece of bridge between me and Jesus. Mm. Because he allowed me to see light in the darkness and life in death and joy in sorrow and grace in sin, richness in poverty, and his glory. Mm. And I remember I was crying through all this movie, and I asked him, is it really love? And he said, yes, my love on the cross, because on the cross, I'm thinking about you and I know you. Mm. And because this cross, I have this love. And, you know, all this night I couldn't sleep. I was talking with him because I just had these questions about his actions, about his life. Because honestly, why Christianity is special? Because just our God was able to give his son for us. Yeah. And he gave his life for each of us.
So when you talk about panting for a deer, panting for water, you mm-hmm. obviously feeling the need, there was something in you that was searching and you felt need in your life. Were there certain things going on?
I think I had this need because if you will compare with earthy standards, we had a good life. I mean, we already had place for living. My husband and I had a great job. We were married. We had two kids. I mean, everything was great. But inside of me, I had this feeling that something bigger exists in this world. Uh-huh. And this is not what really, I mean, it's good to have all this stuff, but it's not really what is important or value. So my life, I was created, or my life was created for something bigger than just have these earthy, you know, things.
Yes.
Let's say in this way. I don't know if it makes sense.
Yes, that makes sense. That makes sense. So the Ukraine went through its own difficult years when you were there, correct?
Yeah, I think in Ukraine we always had some problems with, you know, economic, or from the beginning, from 1991, we always had something in our country, and people always, you know, believe that the next year will be better, the next government will make our life happier, but it's never happened. So all what I remember about Ukraine, the people became poorer. They lost everything what they had when Soviet Union fell apart, because during one night people lost all their money what they had, all their accounts were, you know, penniless. And we had several revolutions, and finally in 2013 the war began in our country.
So tell me how you experienced that. I mean, you were right in the epicenter of where fighting was breaking out, correct?
Yeah, I can give you one example how we experienced it. So when war started in our country, politicians were dividing power while innocent people were dying by thousands. The laws didn't work at all. There was corruption all around, and my husband and I, we started to think about moving in different country. The deciding moment came when in broad daylight snipers shot 100 people on the central square, and our 10-year-old son Zahar was just a block away from this incident. He was in the school. And roads, subway, airports were blocked. Border was shut down. And even cell services were turned off. Just, you know, imagine this situation. You know that your child just in the regular school. And you are able to see all this news on TV. I've got a call from the teacher, and she said, you know, your child in the safe place, but you don't have any chance to get him back from school because they just blocked everything was as possible, and we have to stay in the school with all these kids. So our president, the president of the country, and his entourage shamefully fled the country and never came back. So chaos everywhere, and my husband and I, we spent next 9 months working to live in the country. And it was very hard because Ukraine looked down on people with high education and with little children. Yeah, because they understand that if people with, you know, our country, if you want to leave our country even for vacation or some trip, you have to have a visa.
Okay.
And everybody understand that if you have high education and especially little kids, you probably will leave and never come back.
I see. Okay.
And in this moment, we already, you know, had 4 kids, and they knew that if we will get a visa, we will never be able to come back. So they wanted to keep us in the country. And finally, after daily visits to the embassy, submitting countless paperwork and a lot of, you know, prayers, we were in Warsaw. It's the capital of Poland. So okay. We moved in this different country, and we met, you know, wonderful people and soccer club for our son, church, new friends. And I lived there with my kids, but my husband still, you know, went forth and back because he still had his business in Ukraine.
The government forced him back?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how long were y'all doing that arrangement where you were in Poland? And
so we did it for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And finally, my husband received a promising partnership offer. And what was the most important when we lived in Poland, we didn't hear shots fired at night. Mm. Because the last several months before we moved from Ukraine to Poland, you know, sometimes when you go to sleep, you're able to hear these shots. And every time I was thinking, okay, if somebody died in this moment or not, you know, you're always in it, even if you are not involved in this war situation, but you are still able to, you know, hear it.
Mm-hmm. So did you deal with a lot of fear in that time? You have small children, you're in this transition. I would imagine that you have some things you could teach us about facing fear with faith.
You know, I never think about it before, but when you mentioned about fear, I think yes. And the biggest fear, it was about our kids, how to protect our kids. You know, you have 3 kids and you understand it's naturally how parents try to protect and keep the kids in safe place. I think it was the biggest fear for my husband and for me. And we just, you know, took God's promises and we preached these promises to ourselves.
Yeah.
And prayers, let's say prayers, helped us a lot to go through all this all this transaction process.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump ahead, and I'm not sure how far we're jumping ahead in years, but your oldest son came to the United States for he was an exchange student, correct?
Yeah, correct. My husband and I will always strive to help our children reach their dreams. And like I said, because economical situation was hard in Ukraine and we grew up, you know, there, and we were able to see, even if you do a lot of efforts and you still good student in school, for example, but it's very hard to change your future.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted for our kids to get a good education abroad. And our oldest son, Pasha, he was very smart in math and different science, and he knew 5 different languages. So we wanted him to get this experience. And additionally, we never had any Christian school in Ukraine, and we still don't have. And we thought if he will go, you know, in different country, get this great education in Christian school, it would be the best what we can do for our child. And it was honestly very hard to let him go, because he was just, you know, amazing child. And sometimes we were kidding with him and we said, you are a son of our dream. And he knew that it's kind of joke, but in the same time, it's true.
Mm-hmm. How old was he when he went to the
He finished middle school. So, but when you finish middle school in Ukraine, you are already 15 years old. So after ninth grade, he left, and we found such a wonderful place in Tyler in the United States, and in Texas in the United States. And it was private Christian school. And I remember we had the first interview with him and the staff from the school. And I didn't know English, and I said, Pasha, ask them if they really have Christian, very high academic, you know, education. And it was kind of a big leap of faith for us to send him in the United States for a better future. Mm-hmm.
So he came and went to school, and how did he thrive there, or did he struggle? What was that first year like for y'all?
For us, it was very hard to let him go.
Yeah.
But for him, he was excited about everything, what was going on here. And I remember how he said, you know, Mom, we have a chapel. And sometimes we pray before and after classes. And he've got a lot of friends around the world because it was... this school open for kids from different countries as well. So he met a lot of kids who came around the world. The teachers were very dedicated. I think he had amazing, fabulous experience here.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier that your fear whenever you lived in the Ukraine with your family was a lot about your kids. Mm-hmm. And whenever Pasha came, how long was he here before he was in his car accident?
He was here for almost 3 years.
Okay. And unfortunately, your greatest fear came true. Was it his senior year in high school?
Yeah, he was in his senior year, and it was March 2015. He called me in the morning. And he called me excitedly, telling me his mom about his new success at school. And in this moment, I couldn't even imagine, just couldn't even imagine that it would be our last "I love yous." He was supposed to have, you know, regular soccer practice, but because rain was going to be, the practice was canceled, and they got together with friends, and they wanted to get some food and finish their homework.
But so he got into a car accident. Can you tell me about the moment that you received that news? How did you find out that he had been in an accident?
In this moment, like I said before, we lived in Poland. And on Wednesday at 5 a.m., I just got a call. And I even didn't want to answer because it was 5 a.m. But I thought, okay, I don't know this number, but I would love to answer. And from the other side of phone, the man whispered in Russian. So he spoke in Russian, but he had such a big accent. And very quiet, he said, "Your son, Pasha, accident happened. And your son, Pasha, didn't make it. And we couldn't help him, so he died." And then it was several seconds silent, and he said, "Are you going to come?" And I said, "Yes." And we finished our conversation. This is all information what I had in this moment. And when this guy called me, when I received a phone call no mother should even get ever, especially being on the other side of the ocean from, you know, her son, it was 6,000 miles between us. And of course, a lot of emotions started to be in my heart, and tears and everything. Yeah.
What did you do when you hung up that phone?
So when I got this call, and because a lot of emotions came in my mind and heart, and it wasn't, you know, positive emotions, I knew that just one person who is able to hold me through all of that is Jesus. And I just stand on my knees and I started to pray to him. And I really didn't have understanding of what I'm supposed to pray. And I just started to glorify his name. And I started to repeat all promises and truth from Bible, what I knew. And I spent probably 1 hour on my knees in this moment, because the pain what came in my heart didn't give me even the chance to breathe. And my husband wasn't at home this moment because he was on the way from Germany to Poland. He was driving in this moment, and the rest of my kids, they still slept in their beds, and I didn't know when they will wake up, how I will tell them that Pasha died. And it was also a very hard moment for me.
So when your kids got up, did you tell them or did you?
So, yes, but, you know, I thought how I have to say it, or, you know, should I change my tone? What I have to do? And then when we just had a breakfast together, I was crying all this time and I couldn't stop. It was more than I was able to control. And they probably had this question in their head, why their mom is crying, you know, 6 a.m. and she already crying, and it's unusual for me. And during the breakfast, I just said that during this night when we slept, Pasha was killed in a car crash. And, you know, they started to cry immediately, and we all cried. And I just thought, I just have to take them, and I just have to take them and bring to the school, because I can handle all this right now.
Yeah.
And so I did it.
When you received the phone call, did you get any detail regarding what had happened, or when did more details come for you?
No, and I didn't have any details. I didn't know how it happened. Mm-hmm. And what I did, I just went on the, you know, Google, and I put this information about my son, and immediately I saw some pictures from the crash stand. I saw these two cars, broken cars, and honestly, in the deep place of my heart, I still hoped that it's kind of a mistake. Yeah. You know, maybe it's happened with someone else.
Right, right. So when you got more details, you found out that this was a drunk driver who hit the car of your son was in. He wasn't driving, but he was a passenger in a car that was hit by a drunk driver. That is even more to comprehend and to process. When did you find that out? Was it when you arrived in the U.S.?
Yes. I got more details after I arrived in the United States, and the first time when I came to the United States was for funeral of my son. I never been here before. My husband came and visited our son here when he was in school, but I didn't have the chance to come because I wasn't able to get a visa. They rejected my request several times. I've figured out more details later, but for me as a mom, And for my husband also, we didn't want to know a lot of details. Mm-hmm. Because all this tragedy and pain overwhelmed us, and we didn't need these details. So the details, we didn't need details in this moment because grief was so deep.
Mm-hmm. How did God meet you in your grief, in that initial grief and the ongoing grief that is still present? How has God met you in that?
I would love to say that it was several stages, but I'm not sure that it's good representative of grief. But the first year, even more than the first year, I think I was still in shock. And everything changed in our life. When I said everything, it means everything, because country, education, friends, church, even language were changed in our life. But the Lord was the same. He the same in Ukraine. He the same in the United States, in Texas. And he was just one constant in my life. And I had a lot of conversation with him, prayers with him, questions, because during the day I was busy with my other kids, but at night I couldn't sleep at all. Five, six nights in a row, I wasn't able to sleep. Not because I had some, you know, nightmares. No, it's not about it. It's just conversation from heart to heart and trying to understand what is going on, what is his plan for our life. And I ask him sometimes very, you know, simple questions like, tell me what is love for you? Or what is joy? How it's coming in our life or in our heart? What does it mean? Show me some examples in Bible, you know, from people who had the same experience. And it was very long night conversations, but sometimes I miss these conversations because my pain pushed me in his huge, deep presence, and it was the precious moments. Mm-hmm. And a little bit later, when shock came down, I made a decision that I still able to race, to run my race with joy, and Jesus is more than enough for me. And I started to serve people in any way what I could.
I like that you just said, or what stuck out to me, what you just said is that you made a decision.
Yeah.
You made a decision that basically you would keep walking forward.
Yeah, I keep walking forward. And I think we always have a choice in our life. And it's always choice between fear and love. And I encourage everyone to choose love in their life, because love will change our life.
What do you mean by that? Loving and serving other people?
Loving and serving other people, and start from your family. Because fear, you know, doesn't have purpose, and fear always bring us to wrong emotions and feelings and depression. And but our feelings doesn't have any intellect, so if we will follow all this fear, feelings, emotions, And it's not really way and purpose from God for our life.
Friends, I know you're loving this conversation with Olga, but I want to stop now and tell you about Crossway. Crossway's purpose as a not-for-profit ministry is to publish gospel-centered, Bible-centered resources that honor our Savior and serve His church. They seek to help people understand the massive implications of the gospel and the truth of God's word for all of life and for the glory of God. One such resource is a new book by Gloria Fuhrman called Labor with Hope. In a world full of advice for pregnant women, you might be surprised to hear that the Bible also has a lot to say about pregnancy, offering real life-shaping hope that nothing in the world can match. Through 25 short meditations, Gloria, a mother of four and volunteer doula, helps women of all ages, but especially expectant moms, see labor and birth throughout the storyline of the Bible. This book will help you direct your focus off yourself and onto Christ, who offers strength and power to truly labor with hope. Learn more about Labor with Hope and other resources at crossway.org/byfaith2. All right, friends, let's get back to my conversation with Olga.
There also must have been a decision to forgive the person who killed your son. Can you speak to that and help us understand, was this person prosecuted? Did you have an opportunity to speak to that person, or what process have you gone through in relation to forgiveness?
The person who killed my son, my son was his third victim. And he had a history, of destructive behavior, family history. He had a family history of destructive behavior. And he already had a lot of DWIs and a lot of different stuff. So he was just 26 years old when he killed my son. And we had 6 months after crash, we had a victim impact statement. And everyone who was involved in this crash was able to speak to this guy. And I didn't want to speak because I really didn't have any words what I want to tell to him. And then one of my friends called me just several days before this event, and she said, because I didn't speak in English, she said, I will come and make this trip, and we'll translate you if you will speak. And I said, I don't have any words and what I have to tell him. And then she said one phrase, you never know how your words will affect or influence on this person. So I said, okay, give me several days. And I remember I just, I started prayer and I said, God, if you want me to speak to him, give me this word. I mean, give me your words, your speech, everything what you want to tell this guy through me. If you trusted me this experience, use it for your glory, because I really don't know what I have to say. And I spent 3 days to I spent 3 days praying about it. And then one day before this victim impact statement, I just closed the door in my room and I put worship music and I started to cry. And God said, tell him about my love. And, my answer was, what I have to tell him. And he said, tell him about my love because this is just one what he need. And you are the same in my eyes, you are the same child like he is. Mm-hmm. And it's no different for me when I watch on you and when I watch on him. And I said, okay, tell me what I have to tell him. And I just took a piece of paper and pencil and I wrote everything what it was in my heart. And so my friend came and she translated me, and this guy was crying through all of my speech. He've got 50 years in prison.
What did you say to him?
In general, I said that I know where is my son right now, and he spent 6,427 days with us, and we are grateful for each of these days. And I told him that who knows that maybe one day he will be in the heaven and God will, because God is waiting for him and he will run into him and hug him and all heaven will applaud him because he made this decision. And I told him that if Jesus will have a choice to come on this earth just for him, just for one person on this earth, he still will come and he still will go on the cross and he still will give his precious blood for him because he values this relationship, he loves him, and he wants to have this. He wants to have his son back.
Do you think that saying that out loud to him helped solidify in your own heart that you were able to forgive? Do you still feel like there are times where you choose to forgive again?
No, I never came back. I never came back in my thoughts. About it. I mean, about forgiveness. I never came back in this moment or in this place again, because when I did it, after this victim impact statement, I felt like I did the most important thing in my life and I'm ready to meet my father on the heaven.
Yes. Wow. Yes.
My heart was just, you know, rejoice, and it was more than I can express in the words. But it gave me a huge freedom inside of me, and I'm just grateful for this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've seen pictures of Pasha. He was such a handsome
boy. Thank you.
But tell us, help us know who he was. What was he like? What was his personality? What did he love?
He was very open heart child. And like I said, we married with my husband very early, and after 9 months after our marriage, Pasha was born, and I was just 18 and my husband 20.
Oh, wow.
So we actually, you know, grew up with our child, and we spent, we always spent time together. We never leave each other. We always were together. And this bond, what we created between us, and this very deep relationship, understanding, it was the most valuable for all of us, for my husband, me, and my son. And we didn't understand each other. We did understand each other just, you know, by eyes. We didn't need a lot of words to communicate sometimes, because we already were able to read what he wants or what we want to tell him. And some funny story, sometimes he said, "Mom, could you read in my eyes what I want?" and I said, "Yes, of course I can." And I always was, you know, right.
Oh, that's great.
So he very appreciate this time with family. When he had a choice sometimes, you know, to go with friends for some event or even, I don't know, even to the movie, if we had the same plan to go with family in some place, he always chose this time with family. And actually, he was the reason why we had all our other kids, because I grew up in family when I was just, you know, only one wanted adorable child. And I also wanted to have just one child, and it's supposed to be a boy. I even didn't think about, you know, more kids in the family. And Pasha always was able us to have brother or sister. So finally, we've got four in our family. So he's the reason why we have other kids as well.
Well, and you kind of touched on it. I'm not sure if the listeners picked up, but you mentioned transition and that everything changed, because also when Pasha died, you and your family moved to the United States. You moved to the city in Texas where his school was.
Mm-hmm.
So everything changed, like, completely. You said that language, country, job. Your family now has changed and shifted because of his death. And so can you tell us what that was like? That's a lot in a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, how did you get, was it through what happened with Pasha that the U.S. gave you visas to come to the U.S.?
It's also very amazing story because, like I mentioned before, I wasn't able to come in the United States for a while because American Embassy rejected my request about visa status. But in this moment, when we lived in Poland and everything happened, we applied for visa for me and other kids to be able to come for funeral. And when we've got his death certificate, what it was like basic thing why we are asking about visa, it was already Friday afternoon, and American Embassy closed their doors just 15 minutes before we came. And you know, it was March, a little bit cold, rain outside, and security guy said, you just can't come inside. And I was crying all time, and because it was kind of hopeless situation, I understood that my child just died several days ago, and I'm not able to come to be with him. You know, even to be with him, I didn't have this opportunity. Yeah. And I just sat in front of this American embassy in Warsaw, in Poland, almost on the road. It was kind of, you know, curb with flowers. And I sat in front of the door and I was crying. My husband was trying to explain all the security guys what is going on. They didn't want to listen to him. And finally, after maybe 30 minutes, I started to pray and I said, you know, God, you know all this situation, and you know that I'm in different country and it's 6,000 miles between us, and I just don't have this opportunity to be with my son. Yeah. And then one lady came to me and she saw me from the second floor and she said, what's going on in your life? Why you are crying so hard? And I said, my child just died 2 days ago. I am in different country. He is 17 years old and I don't have opportunity to go for his funeral. And she said, come in. So she took all our documents. She didn't ask any questions. And we all got visas during 10 minutes.
Wow.
So we've got, from the beginning, we've got a visitor visa. And we came in the United States and we decided to, you know, to stay here because Pasha always wanted us to come here and to stay here in the United States. And it was one of his dreams. We've got visitor's visa and then we use it for the first 6 months. After that, we did not have any other options to stay here as to become students. My husband and I already had master degree diplomas that we received 16 years prior in Ukraine.
Can I stop you right there? Because okay. I think for people listening, most Americans don't understand, and I don't fully understand the immigration process, but you're saying you have a degree, you're an engineer, but you cannot come and work in the United States. You have to go back to school, start over, because that's the only way you could come is on a student visa, right?
Right. It's right, because if you want to stay in the United States, it's in any different country, not just in the United States. You have to have a reason why you will stay here.
Yes.
And after all evaluations, our attorney said, it's just one opportunity for your family to stay here to be the students again. And we didn't speak in English.
And that also means that you don't have a job that you can earn money to pay for what you need.
Right. So you have to be students, but you really even don't have enough support to be able to start it. All community where we came here, I mean, this Christian school where our son was, the church where he visited, they just united together and they helped our family. So, for example, one family who even didn't know us before and never met us, they provided us with place for living, and we still live with this family last 4 years. And some families did some commitment to help us with tuition process. What I want to explain that God just lifted up a lot of people in this community who heard our story and knew our son. And through all these people, he worked and supported us and covered us with his love.
So you've been in Texas how long now?
Four and a half years.
So you're becoming a Texan according to your Starbucks order.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And we enjoy Texas and especially people and community here.
Yeah
it's special for us.
It seems like you are finding your purpose right in the middle of this tragic story of losing your child. That you, right when we got on, before we started recording, you said, I just came from someone's house who they just lost their child, and you're ministering to them. And it seems like you have found a great purpose in that. And I love how you said earlier that you are finding that serving people and loving people versus fear is really your choice and what you're doing with your life and what you're doing with this story of loss, that you're using it to bring glory to God. Can you help us understand that? Just kind of leaving us with, I'm imagining listeners who have experienced, or they are walking through something so difficult, and they just are like you, they're just deep in tears. Can you leave us with some words of encouragement or challenge of how God can use the very tears and stories that we have to be a benefit to others?
When we go in the midst of storms, sometimes it's, you know, very hard to understand, like you said, your purpose or even goal of your life. But when you are able to look back and see all these God's plans during all these years, you are able to see that every situation, every step, every day, it was a purpose. It was purposely for your life. And moreover, 2 months ago, my mom died and she was 60 years old. She had cancer.
Sorry to hear
and,
that.
Thank you. And because all this hard immigration process, I didn't have opportunity to go for a funeral.
Oh, no.
Because my attorney said that if you will go, you don't have any guarantee that you will be able to come back in this country. And, you know, go through death and hard time, we think that sometimes it's meaningless, but it's not. It's not. It's work for eternal weight of glory of God. And what we have to do, just one thing, even when we don't understand what is going on in our life, and we think it's meaningless, we just have to trust God. And if you cannot, just get along with God and take this truth, His promises, His word, and preach it to your mind until your mind, you know, will move it in your heart, and your heart will sing with confidence that God cares about you. He holds you in the shelter of your heart all this time. And, you know, His word said that I always will be with you and I will hold you on your right hand. So He knows each situation, and even if it's hard for us, it still has a purpose for His glory.
Well, I want to thank you for, this is a hard story to tell, and I'm thankful that you've been willing to let other people into your story and into to hear about the grief and the process of forgiveness and how you're finding purpose now in your new life in Texas. I'm just so thankful that you're willing to share with us. It's been an encouragement to hear, Olga.
Thank you, Christine, so much. Thank you for having me.
I am so grateful for Olga's willingness to share her story with me. I love how each guest this season has pulled out truths from God's word that they've clung to, that have changed them, and that they stand on. Have you noticed that theme? The word pours out of them, and that is what makes their story so profound and so important for us to hear. Friends, join me next week as I talk with author of Glorious Weakness, Aaliyah Joy. I recently read her book, and she writes so eloquently and beautifully. Aaliyah and I talk about some really heavy things that often go unvoiced in the Christian community. We talk about suicidal thoughts, mental illness, and poverty. And Aaliyah doesn't just talk about these things from an outsider's perspective. She tells of how she herself has experienced these very things and what we need to know about them as Christians. Join me next week for this important conversation. And until then, friends, keep walking forward by faith.